I feel like we're losing that portion of the industry. Yeah. Those guys don't exist anymore. It's the I hunt whitetails in Iowa with a bow. For this arbitrary line to be drawn in the sand of, well, it's the cell camera technology that's too far. Not the advanced silicas going into high-end spotting scopes that let me see 20% further than I've ever been able to see. We as citizens and voters in this country on a wide range of issues are increasingly being asked to choose between the extremes. When the solution is a collaborative, nuanced approach. This is Trent Marsh from Spy Point. You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I've been blessed to harvest 22 of the 29 North American animals with my bow.
My personal 24-hour record for death threats is 88.
They will start putting two and two together and realize this is how you call bulls in.
So when I go hunting now, that's the ethos I take with me. You know, whatever this hunter's going to throw at you, pull your big girl pants up and you get on with it.
Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
So I'm a geek. Magicians and dragons and magic swords. I kid you not, man. I'm the biggest dork in the gun business.
I'm Freddie Hartice, Hollywood Hunter.
This is Aaron Snyder.
Hey, this is Trevin Stoltzfus with Outback Outdoors.
This is Rihanna Carey.
Hi, this is John Sloan of Interviews with the Hunting Masters.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on, and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
All right, y'all, so hopping right into today's episode. As you can tell by some of the background noise, I am still here at SHOT Show, hanging out in the Spy Point booth with Trent Marsh. Trent is, I met you through POMA, and mm-hmm. we've done a little bit of business together since then, mm-hmm. and man, it's been a few years now. I think it was,
you know, we've kind of memory hold years in there with the craziness of the last few, but I think it was 2019 in Wichita.
That seems like so long ago, dude.
that's a decade in COVID years.
Oh, geez, yeah. whole lifetimes. It's a lot has happened since then, which just makes it seem even longer. But so, you know, I always like to kick things off with just a little introduction of mm-hmm. who you are and really. How did you get introduced to the outdoors and hunting and fishing and all of that?
So a little bit about me. So obviously I'm editorial manager at Spy Point Trail Cameras, which is part of the marketing team, kind of a little bit of a marketing Swiss Army knife. I've been actually kind of had like one of those Mandela effect moments at ATA show a couple weeks ago where like I was telling everybody I've been in the industry for almost a decade. And as I'm standing there ordering a convention center burrito, I'm like, okay, I'm bad at math. I'm actually almost 15 years. Like we've memory holed so much time that it's been almost 15 years that I've been in and around the industry now. So, been on it from a marketing manager side, you know, a couple different companies, do some freelance stuff myself and some marketing consulting and some writing and, just kind of bounced all the way around it. I've really been around the outdoors my entire life and growing up, had some folks in my family that hunted different things. You know, my grandfather back in the day, he did some deer hunting and some big game. He used to go out west and stuff. By the time I was old enough to be around, he was really just kind of rabbit hunting and fishing and ice fishing. So that was kind of grandpa, and dad was a deer hunter and, you know, had some friends that did some other stuff, but, I was the one that kind of like, I just, what do you like? I like all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not an ice fisher. I'm not a bass fisherman. I'm not a whitetail hunter. We know each other a little in personal life, kind of a Renaissance man in general. Like, so what do you like to do outdoors? Literally anything.
I like to be outdoors. Yes. Regardless of what takes me there, I like to be outdoors.
Am I cutting wood, putting up a tree stand, casting jigs? Don't care. Doesn't matter. If I can do it outside, I'm going to do it. So, you know, trapping has been the thing I've gotten into here recently. I never knew anybody that trapped growing up and just kind of completely randomly, okay, all right, this is my next. Going to learn just enough about it to figure out how terrible I am at it and do it anyway. Like, that's the thing, right?
That sounds like you're describing how I go about everything.
Literally everything, exactly.
That's actually something that I've been really wanting to get into. When I was back in California, I was looking into doing it, and then they, like, banned trapping.
Right.
And, you know, now that I'm in Montana, and I've kind of got my own land, and I know there's coyotes and critters and all kinds of stuff crossing my land on a regular basis, I'm like, shoot, this could be something pretty interesting and fun. Well, try something new.
It's so the fur market's in the tank, right? Like, you're not getting into trapping for that. And my initial reason for it was, so I'm in Indiana, Northeast Indiana, so we don't have a lot of game options. We have turkey and we have whitetail. And honestly, the turkey has just been in the last, you know, 2 decades that it's really kind of come back, but it's still kind of what I'd call Swiss cheese population. And so, like, out at my folks' place, like, we've seen turkeys off and on for about a decade now, but they never really seem to stick. And now for 2 springs in a row, I've had trail camera pictures of freshly hatched poults with the hen, clearly a day or two old, and then they're just gone.
Interesting.
You know, so a lot of raccoons. You know, so that was kind of, we know how hard the raccoons and the possums and all that are, are the nest raiders, and, you know, getting hatched is just step one. Like, they're still ground nesting at that point.
There's a lot of life they got to live before they're
exactly. So it was, kind of my response more than anything of, because the other trail camera picture I had, was 13 raccoons on one walnut tree that I had a corn feeder hanging from in, like, March. So, yeah, well, let's maybe try to do something and kill 2 raccoons with 1 stone was essentially how that worked.
Dude, ever since I was a kid, I've always wanted to, and I think, you know, everyone after they read, like, Where the Red Fern Grows, like, wants to get some hound dogs and, like, go run dogs for coons and, like, I've never thought of this before. I've never thought about that until you brought that up. Like, I think that was probably, like, what kind of subconsciously started my interest in any of this ages ago, kind of planted that seed, because that's the first time I can remember, like, really thinking about hunting and, like, thinking it was kind of cool, like, it was, like, something interesting. And but yeah, I you know, I mean, I don't wouldn't really be doing it for the furs, anything like that. I mean, I do want to start learning to tan, and I think that's a great way to do it. It's like, shoot some coyotes, get some raccoons, get some whatever, and teach myself. You're not out too much if you screw up one of those hides. And
well, and that's because I'm in for a penny, in for a pound. Like, okay, I don't want to do it just to kill, right? Like, you want to make use of it. Of course, the fur market right now is not great for about a dozen reasons, but for the people that want to kind of do the cradle to grave thing, like, everything that you can get out of it, you know, kind of with the blade thing, you know, doing stuff with your hands and learning how to do stuff. And, you know, you might only get, if you can sell your raccoon right now, you might get $2.
Yeah.
Or even Indiana, so Eastern Coyote, if I can sell it, I might get $5 or $10. But make a nice, like, a fur trapping hat or a pair of gloves or, you know, something like that. Well, that's $70. That's $100. That's, you got some different, even if you just want to tan them as a wall hanger and sell them on Facebook Marketplace, like, there's, you can put a little effort into it and kind of cut that middleman out of it. And A, you're learning another skill, but then B, okay, yeah, I'm not going to get rich off this, but at least something that offsets some of that expense.
Well, that's, like, one of those things. Like, I've got rabbit furs that, like, my grandpa or great grandpa, I can't quite remember, he tanned like rabbits he raised. I think one was one he shot, one was one he actually raised. But just some stuff he tanned, and it's like they're like sitting on a shelf with, I've got like a skull on top of them, but it's like just a cool piece, and it's something that I, you know, connect with. It's like my history from my grandfather, and but yeah, I mean, like I've been talking a lot more about homesteading recently with people. You know, we both are have new places with a little bit of land, and you know, with that comes interest in doing other things, and and with that whole homesteading aspect, you want to start planting a little bit. You want to start drawing some more game to your, you know, your land. You want to be able to take those things and make gloves. It comes with this whole new renewed desire to be self-sufficient, I think. And so whether it's learning how to take a rabbit skin or a coon skin and turn it into a pair of gloves, a hat or something. It's like, you may not be wearing it into town to go grocery shopping. Actually, I probably would.
Right, just because.
Absolutely would. I would stop shaving my beard again. I would shower maybe once a month, and I would go in just to be that guy that's like, the little kids walk by and they're like, I saw him.
We just recently wrapped up watching Vikings.
Yes,
And I took a screenshot and sent it to a buddy, and I said the first two coyotes that I get are being made into a shoulder,
some sort shawl, of
over the shoulder. He goes, "That's fine. I'm going to come to Starbucks and record you walking into Starbucks and ordering your." And if you don't turn around and yell skull at the rest of the
just walk in.
Just because.
Just walk in with like a horn mug and slam it on the counter and say, a latte for my a latte for my mug.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
A triple double upside down caramel macchiato.
No. No milk.
Almond milk. Steamed.
Uh-huh. Double shot, please, by the name of Thor. Absolutely.
In Odin's name, I demand more.
Exactly.
I demand the third shot.
But it's something else to do. You know, it's fun to do that stuff.
Well, I've been, you know, I've talked with a few people, and it's like, hunting season, it's like, I'm in Montana, and so I'm fortunate enough, we've got long hunting seasons, and we've got opportunity pretty much 95% of the year. Depends on what you're into, but I think some people get into the spot, and it's just like, anything I can do that allows me to kind of touch that idea of the outdoors and hunt, more than just like, I mean, I'll go for a hike any day. I love going and just kayaking out in the lake. I love going hiking. I love just being out in nature. There's that concept of being an active participant in it. And so anytime we get a chance to touch that and connect with our roots, I think is anybody that really loves it is going to take that opportunity.
Well, and for me, you know, it's one of those things where there's the perception of working in the outdoor industry, which I've been doing for almost 15 years, and there's the reality of it, you know? So, everybody's, oh man, that must be like you're doing marketing for the out, like all you do is like go around and hunt with your celebrity partners and I'm like, I've told a lot of guys, like, well, when they're like, are you hiring a guy, I said, well, why? Why do you want to come work here? Oh man, I love hunting, I live for it, I'm here for it, eat, sleep, breathe it. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing in November? Oh man, the rut's coming on. I'm getting ready. You know, ice fishing might be around the corner, getting the decoys around for goose season. But I'm like, great. I have a catalog to finalize. I have press releases to write. I have ad copies to send out. I'm scheduling meetings for ATA and SHOT. I'm finalizing trade show environmentals and writing web copy. I love to hunt. And I take every chance that I get to go. And, you know, that to-do list, when you're talking about trail cameras or binoculars or UTVs or camo or whatever the case may be, it's a cooler to-do list than another. But there, all of that comes before actually being able to be out and be hunting. So for me, like, there's the there's no real slow season, but the busiest of seasons is really October 1st, Indiana's bow season opens up, and that's when I'm thinking about media planning for the following year, trade show planning, setting appointments, getting all my ducks in a row, not all my ducks in the water hole.
Yeah.
That I have to start being ready for next year, and then
you don't get to disappear for 2 weeks. Go to the hunting cabin and sit in a tree stand and drink beer.
It's not going to work. So I, as opposed to, and honestly, it's kind of a concern that I have about the future of hunting in general, is everybody's gotten so niche. You know, I'm an eclectic person just by nature. I don't. I get focused on one thing in a broad way. I'm focused on the outdoors. I'm not focused on bow hunting, bow-legged whitetails, traditionally with a left-handed bow and tree stands that only faced east. Like we're getting in like these hyper niches of
I'm pretty sure I saw that booth in the next room over. Yeah,
yeah. The
left-handed east-facing
left-handed traditional bow hunter, east-facing tree stand, bow-legged whitetail hunters Association of America.
I'm going to make that website. I'm going to buy that domain name and make that website.
I guarantee you the domain is being investigated by more than one person. It has to be, because that's what we keep seeing. You know, growing up, you know, we're roughly the same age-ish.
Yeah.
Growing up, like, Outdoor Life and Field and Stream were, like, pinnacle, the mastheads of the industry, and we've seen them go digital only. And there's other, to me, that's not a print is dying thing, because you have other print titles that are expanding, but Outdoor Life and Field and Stream were about the outdoors. It was a trapping article, then an ice fishing article, then a tarpon article, and then a whitetail hunting article, and then a story about hunting mountain goat. And those guys, I feel like we're losing that portion of the industry.
The outdoor
generalist. Those guys
generalist.
Don't exist anymore. It's the, I hunt whitetails in Iowa with a bow. That's great. And I am thrilled that we have those hunters. And I am a rabbit hunter using beagles and a 410 shotgun, and that's great, and God love them too. But we don't have enough guys that are doing all of that stuff, or even necessarily exposed to all of that stuff. And then we're seeing some of the that's where the advocacy holes come in. So part of me getting into trapping was me just investigating as we're starting to see some of the trapping bans and you talk about, like, California. You know, well, okay, I've never been around this. I want to educate myself about it so that whether I'm for it or against it, I like to think of myself as an intellectually honest person. I'm going to have to educate myself before I can have an opinion about it. And ideally, I have some firsthand experience with it. And I feel like we're starting to see some of that slip away, not just in this industry. Sadly, I think it's something, now let's globalize everything, right? Like, I think we're seeing that with a little bit of just how we live our daily life, is because of social media and the digital experience and how easy it is to find the echo chamber that you want to exist in. Plant your ass dead center in the middle of it and get rid of everything else that might fly counter to that. We're able to expand our horizons to things that we never expected, but we can also close ourselves off so easily. So for me, having more opportunities through the course of the year because of my work schedule and because of some of those demands, like, if I just pegged myself to being an Indiana whitetail hunter, I'm going to be a very disappointed dude a lot of times, because the demands that I have on me from work and family just aren't going to give me enough time to do that the way that I want.
Yeah.
And the way I diffuse that frustration, diffuse that stress, and diffuse that want to be an active participant in that space is, we have hard water in Indiana this winter. I'm going to go home and I'm going to go jig for bluegill this weekend. 3 months from now, that's going to be gone, and I'm going to go pitching for bass. I'm going to do some trapping. I'm going to do some whitetail. You know, if somebody, hey, we're going duck hunting this weekend, you want in? Yeah, sure. Now I'm going to try to kill my spring turkey. I would rather walk down the buffet and try a little bit of everything rather than go to an all-you-can-eat prime rib dinner and just be stuck on one.
Yeah.
I want the prime rib. I want the chicken tenders. I want the bread pudding.
Well, especially if you're only going to have a chance to eat half of that prime rib anyway.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
No, and it's interesting, you know, you're talking about, like, we're so niche, and it's, like you said, it's getting worse and worse and tighter and more specific, and we're running out of those generalists. And I think that's, you know, I just talked recently with John Stallone about the predator bans coming down the line in Arizona. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're doing the same attacks in the Pacific Northwest and in California, especially after bears. And it's, you know, the Humane Society are coming after it, coming after it, coming after it. And most people aren't going to give a shit. Mm-hmm. Like, the majority of people just aren't going to care because it's like, whatever, I'm a whitetail hunter in Florida. You know, I do whitetail turkey and... You know, I do some marlin fishing.
I might go on an elk hunt once every decade, or
you know, that's like, you know, probably 5% of that population that'll do that. You know, and they're like, I'm never gonna hunt mountain lion in Arizona. Why should I give a shit? I'm not gonna take the time out of my day. And we talked about that, and that's the problem with getting so niche, is because, you know, I won't harp on this. I've harped on this a million times on this podcast before, but the concept of, like, that frees up resources then for them to come after us. It sets precedent.
Once something else is gone,
they don't
have to worry about that one anymore.
And it sets those precedents across the United States. And so, you know, it's like, I get it. If that's not your thing, if you don't want to do it, I get it if you just don't even agree with that after you've experienced it and after you understand what's going on in other places and other states. And, you know, let's talk about brown bears and grizzly bears. You want to get people's butts puckered up, like
wolves.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. Like probably the two most controversial things, like, you can talk about hunting. And I mean, then there's people like, I'm not one of those smoke a pack a day kind of people. Like, I think wolves are awesome animals and necessary to an ecosystem. Do I think they should not be protected and they've grown out of control and they're destroying other populations? Yes, I fully think that. But
that hits on, not to cut you off.
Oh, yeah,
that,
no.
That hits on, again, let's global. It works in this conversation, but it's also the problem is what makes discussing anything in modern culture such an absolute quagmire, and why it's so difficult to get any of it done in a way that makes sense, is because the answer for wolves and predator management in general is very nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an all or nothing. It's not shoot, shovel, shut up, kill them all, get them all gone. And it's not, and I'm intentionally going to say, the preservationist approach, not the conservationist approach, but the preservationist approach that says you can never kill them. But we as hunters and we as citizens and voters in this country on a wide range of issues are increasingly being asked to choose between the extremes, when the solution is a collaborative, nuanced approach that requires critical thinking and, to some extent, a little bit of give and take on both sides to reach a sustainable, because regardless, either answer is unsustainable.
Yeah.
Zero wolves or 100 wolves, either end of that spectrum is unsustainable. Now, you have the illusion of the middle. The answer is not always in the middle. Sometimes it's 20 wolves. Sometimes it's 80. It's not 50. You can't just run to the middle and say, here's the 50-50 answer, so this must be the best answer. But it's somewhere between 0 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not allowed to choose that as an option, because the only place you can make money is on the extremes. Again, because of that lack of respect and understanding for some of this, we're seeing that generalist and that ability to even understand and appreciate something that I don't necessarily do, you don't then have to be, it doesn't affect me, so I don't care. Why is it, it doesn't affect me, but if that's how you engage, if that's, I'm an active participant in the outdoors, and if that's how you actively participate, I support you being in the field.
Yeah.
The number of times, we won't talk about the other instances that it's been used, but I've used it a lot with hunting and trapping here lately. The number of times I've used the old Franklin trope about we'll either hang together or surely we'll all hang separately is beyond depressing to me. Mm-hmm. Because, damn it, it's not that complicated. This is not a hard conversation to sit down and get somebody on to understand why that matters. But dealing with a person is easy and dealing with people is really hard.
Yeah.
Because a person is thoughtful and intelligent and nuanced and problem solving, and people are emotional, erratic loons. Mm-hmm. As a broad group of people, you will not come to a safe consensus. You will come to crazy town. And that's what we're seeing.
And you know everyone on one side is sitting there thinking like, oh yeah, they sure are crazy loonies.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be a lot of the word they, and people won't be happy, but we're referring
I'm
to you too.
To you too.
I
am the first one. I will point the thumb on this one.
You know how it goes. God help you. If you go to any sort of fucking like Western hunting Facebook group and you post like, oh man, I saw some wolves today on my hunt. They were badass. You know, it was great to see them. You post a picture or something.
Didn't see any elk, did you?
Like,
didn't see any moose, did you?
Why didn't you fucking shoot them? You just smoke a pack a day, wipe all those fuckers out. Like, and again, I think we need a lot less wolves. I think there was a giant mistake reintroducing them in the way they were reintroduced and with no management plan. But wolves are cool fucking animals. Like, I would love to see a wolf. I'd also love to shoot one and have it hanging on my damn wall. But, you know, there's a place for everything. And, you know, it's that nuance, like you said, is getting lost, and it bums me out because here's the deal. You want to fully eliminate any species, I don't care what it is. You know,
save the mosquito. Can we eliminate the mosquito?
I'm okay with that.
Bald-faced hornets? Like, I think we can find some. Here again, the answer is never 100
there
or
you go.
Zero.
Okay.
We can find nuance. We can do away with mosquitoes and bald-faced wasps.
I will give you that. I haven't had to deal with mosquitoes too badly in a while in Montana. It hasn't been horrible.
Yeah, shut up,
ticks.
Sam.
Ticks. Let's get rid of the ticks.
Can do away with ticks.
I can totally do away with ticks. What is it? That Lone Star tick that gives you the meat allergy?
Gives you the meat allergy?
Let's just burn them all in the fires of hell.
Yes.
But you know, that's it. Like, you know, you talk about these animals. If you want to legitimately want to see any animal wiped out completely, you're not an outdoorsman. Don't dare call yourself. You're just, yeah, you may hunt. I don't even want to call you a hunter at that point. Like,
yeah,
you're out for yourself. You want to do your thing. You don't give a shit
about anything else.
You're just as bad as the people that want to eliminate hunting completely. Because we all know the data supports us. Hunting is necessary for the health of these populations. Not only for like the Pittman-Robertson stuff where we get all of this money, but for the balance of these populations, because we know, okay, if we don't, say, kill enough bears or even enough, say, cows in a certain area, and the carrying capacity is way over the carrying capacity, Fish and Game's going to go in a helicopter and pcha, 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 and dump them in a...
Well, and that, honestly, that's a best case.
Yeah.
The worst case is that Mother Nature takes care of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
But it's like those people that say, you know, okay, we need to eliminate some of these species just so there's a bunch more deer. Just as bad as the people saying we can't ever touch these species. Mm-hmm. They both completely lack any sort of nuanced understanding of how the greater system of wildlife can be managed. This whole ecology is critical for the health. You know, you want bigger elk, healthier elk, bigger deer, healthier deer, bigger bears, healthier bears. They all need each other. They all need balance. You know, we need to see some calves get eaten. We need to see some bears get taken.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's nuance. when I start seeing people and hearing people talk in infinitives and using words like always and never and all and none, my antenna go up real quick. And I start getting really judgy about what I'm hearing, and rarely do I hear good things follow. Because very few things on Earth are always or nevers.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So I do want to give you a quick second. You work for SpyPoint. We're going to completely change gears here. I do want to, you know, you talked a little bit about what you do for SpyPoint, working in the industry, which is always funny. You know, like everybody thinks, you know, they're all going to be Remy Warren, Randy Newberg, Steve Rinella. And don't get me wrong, I would love to hunt for a living, but I'm just never going to be that guy. But I wanted to give you just a quick second. Just tell us a little bit about what SpyPoint is for those who don't know, and you know, kind of what's offered.
So SpyPoint is the industry leader in cellular trail cameras. We obviously, you know, we do non-cellular cameras as well, but we've always been really dedicated to making that cellular technology affordable to all hunters. You know, again, I'm Northeast Indiana, so I always kind of had the, why would I ever need a, I'm hunting 20 minutes from, live 20 minutes from where I hunt. Why do I need a cell cam? And then I had one for like 3 days. I'm like, why did I never have a cell cam? But you know, it's always, I remember when they first came out, because I'm old, because my first trail camera was a film trail camera.
Seriously.
Which a lot of like,
Did it have an actual tripwire?
Well, no. That I missed that.
Okay.
But, you know, talk to...
Because, I mean, those weren't all that long ago.
I've talked to Ralph and Vicky about that. They've seen that evolution. Mm-hmm. As long as Ralph and Vicky have been in this, they said literally, like, our first wildlife monitoring thing was literally a string across a deer trail that pulled a timer. That you could go in and see when one deer crossed that trail.
Mm-hmm.
And now it shows up in an app on my phone. But yeah, my very first trail camera took 35mm film that I then had to go to CVS and Walgreens, drop it off to be developed.
A week later.
Yeah, it was... So to see where it's come, but, you know, again, seeing that evolution, the first cell cameras were a small fortune. And SpyPoint's approach has always been any hunter that wants to use this should be able to afford to use it. So that's really what our focus has been driving that affordability and driving the innovation and trying to make sure that for the hunters that want to use cellular trail cameras, that they, the price of that isn't the deciding factor of why they can't.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're seeing right now, I want to say, I mean, it was Arizona and was it Colorado or Utah?
Utah.
It was Utah, right?
Yep.
And we're seeing a lot of these trail cam bans and restrictions come in. And like some of the restrictions I understand, like especially with the cell cameras.
And people are getting, like, a lot of those restrictions have been there a long time. The bans are getting a lot of attention because those are fresh and new. But a lot of those restrictions, to cut you off, have been in place for a while.
And also, I'm gonna call it, there's a big difference between, like, you've got a piece of property that you're leasing and it has food plots and stuff like that. That's very different than you're hunting the mountains in public land for, you know, mule deer versus... Mm-hmm. It's two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get a lot of these restrictions where it's like, okay, you've got a cellular trail, a series of cell cams up. You can't just be sitting there down at the bottom of the trailhead waiting for the herd to come by so you can just hike up and go grocery shopping. That stuff makes absolute sense to me. Like, I have zero issues with that.
And just to be contrarian, though, like, still, what are your chances of making that happen? Because there's still no barrel in the trail camera. How close can you be to that? How far can those animals move in that time? And, you know, how is that... You know what? Shouldn't be able to use a spotting scope. You can use 10-power binoculars, but you can't use a 50-power spotting scope. This gives you an unfair advantage. Your eyes aren't that good. You can't see that far. If you're going to look that much further away to be able to put a stalk onto that mule deer, does it matter if it was a spotting scope that told you that he was a mile away on the other side of that valley or that it's a spotting scope? You still have to cross the terrain the exact same way. You still have to get into that location the exact same way. And all the things that can... Obviously, you know, I want everybody to understand that I've taken metaphorically my spy point hat off. And just as if we go back to what we were talking about earlier, the kind of big tent approach to hunting, yeah, that there still isn't a barrel of a gun or a pointy stick in that trail camera that's going to kill that animal for you. And yeah, it lets you know where they're at. Even me in the east, I'm a 15-minute drive and a little bit of a hike. So even if I know that he's in front of that trail camera right now, it's going to be an hour or two before I can make anything happen with that. Mm. And I promise you, there are 14,827 ways that I can screw up getting from point A to point B. I just talked about it on another podcast. You know, and it's something that kind of I've talked about a little bit over time, that there's a fundamental lack of understanding of how the technology works and what the technology allows you to do,
yeah,
that has led to some of these bans. Because you still have to close it. There's a lot of ground between what the cameras can tell you and what allows you to kill a deer. We have just right at 200 photos of a free range Indiana whitetail deer that is going to gross between 195 and 205 inches, as near as I can tell without putting my hands on it. 40% of them are daylight photos. Fall of 2020. Had that deer pegged. Over the course of 3 weeks, we got about 40% of those photos in that 3 weeks. Had watched him for months. That deer's alive. There were three of us hunting him. If cell cameras were the advantage that sometimes I hear people, yeah, try to make cell cameras out to be, daytime photos. Oh, well, you got a 190 on trail cameras during daylight? Why isn't he dead yet? He's hardwired to be alive. That's why. And there's still a lot of shit that can go wrong between point A and point B. And for this arbitrary line to be drawn in the sand of, well, it's the cell camera technology that's too far. Not the advanced silicas going into high-end spotting scopes that let me see 20% further than I've ever been able to see. Sure, I had to hike to the top of that mountain, but before I had that spotting scope, I would have hiked southeast instead of northwest because of what I saw with that spotting scope. That's not a bridge too far. How I knew that that elk is on that other mountain, whether it was a trail cam or a spotting scope, both are by advanced technology.
Mm-hmm.
People hunting 100 years ago see us taking 1,000-yard shots with brand new powders, new bullets, new rifles. Like, A, they'd be like, friggin' cool. Where do I get one of those? And B, they'd be like, well, I kind of had it a lot harder than that. So This arbitrary fair chase line of this technology is fine. We're not even going to talk about that. This technology, that's a bridge too far.
Yeah.
The fact there's a very small number of people, and this is kind of the other thing that kind of gets into the ban, and why I think we're seeing it happen where it happens. There's a lot of hunters in Utah, but you look at the license breakdown, Michigan hunts in Utah, Pennsylvania hunts in Utah, Texas hunts in Utah, Minnesota, Illinois, Florida, Maine,
yeah,
hunt in Utah. And that's where a lot of that revenue comes from. But Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan and Indiana and Florida and Texas, those guys have their own life. They've got their own state that they live in that they worry about. So these regulations change without a lot of the people that are stakeholders, either near or far, being able to really see it. And with, yep, Utah especially, talking to some folks that are very close to it, who I won't mention by name, the speed at which it happened is very concerning for some stakeholders of Western hunting, that the guy that lives in Texas that might be a huge Utah hunter, he doesn't have time to respond, react, reach out, express his displeasure, because especially once you get into the Rocky Mountains West, a lot of those hunters aren't of those licenses for those states are occurring other places.
Yeah.
And they've got their own battles to fight back in those states. So they can start picking off, all right, where's the low-hanging fruit? Whether it's Defenders of Wildlife, HSUS, the myriad enemies that we have to conservation and hunting, they can find these places where, what's the market inequity? You know, baseball fan or football, what's the market inequity? How can we exploit the system that's in place to outperform everything else? And they're going to start finding those places, and they're going to weasel their way in, and they're going to get death by a thousand cuts. Lose cell cameras here, lose a predator season here, ban trapping here, and all of a sudden you're the frog in the boiling water, and you're cooked before you knew what happened.
Well, and I think, you know, this is one of the things I was talking about with John in this most recent episode I released, was so often this stuff happens in a quiet way, and it's not even just the people that are out of state that don't get to hear about it, that are still stakeholders in that state, but it's even those people in state. Because so often it's, you know, we can't go in every time there's a comment period in every single state we hunt or every single state we want to hunt and say, hey, yes, I really like how these things work. Please keep this. Please keep this. Please don't change this. Please don't change this. It's just unreasonable. And so often when HSUS or these other anti kind of organizations, they go in and they're just under the radar. They're just quietly getting their tens of thousands of people to send in these emails while the comment period's open, and they're very specific. Unless we happen to find out about that, you know, and you know, somebody from Fish and Game leaks that they're getting all these emails or this or that, we don't even know to fight back.
Well, let's tinfoil hat it even a little bit further.
Tinfoil hat on.
Fully comfortable, right? When you see it, where do you typically see that there's something like that going on?
I see it a lot in the western states.
No, I mean, like, where do you find the information?
Oh,
social media.
I get it, yeah, social media.
You see it on social media.
Yeah.
We if you hunt and you're engaged in social media, you see how your content does that's not hunting, and you see how your content does that is hunting. You see the fact-checking thing show up on everything that's pro-hunting. Mm-hmm. It's the possum meme is my current example of, don't shoot me, I eat 5,000 ticks a year. It was one study. Like let's be the obnoxious Facebook fact-checker that's like, well, you put the comma in the wrong place, so we're going to flag this meme, right? But one study showed that a tick might actually eat that many over the course of the year. We're not going to talk about the fact that they will, on average, raid 7 to 10 turkey nests through the course of the year, mm-hmm. and that a turkey does go around and pick bugs off of the ground, and that a turkey might consume upwards of 20 to 30,000 ticks a year, and that in taking out those 5 to 7 nests of up to 20 eggs per nest, they're taking close to 500,000 ticks that could, but he might eat 5,000. There's no fact checker flag on that. So do you think when HSUS needs to get out there that we need to end the horrific insert BS point one, do you think that's getting throttled or fact-checked the way that Illinois trappers, they're wanting to cut back on bobcat season or end the otter season, and they go to share that? Do you think that trapping group is going to be able to get the same reach that Karen's Goat Screw Kentucky County of HSUS that their group gets?
Goat Screw Kentucky.
It's just south of Paducah.
I'm going to use that term so much now. Sorry. But no, I mean, it's like, there is a definite bias. And I mean, there's a part of me that's like, you know what? It's their platform. You know, they can use it.
100%. But even, like you're saying, like, even when we need to play by the rules and do our part right, our rules are different than the rules of the people that we're fighting against. And you know what? First one to tell, I mean, I'm too old and I'm too tired to fight with you fairly. So if I find myself in a fair fight, I've done something wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to lose. I get it. If neither one of us wants to be in a fair fight, if we could flip it the other way, and we could make them the ones that are throttled, and they're the ones that have to fight and scratch for every little bit of information that gets out there, we would absolutely take it that way. I have no interest in winning honorably. I just want to win.
I've always told people the concept of a fair fight is the dumbest idea. Like, that's just this stupid concept.
You don't get style points.
Unless it's like a boxing match, the concept of setting up a fair fight is just stupid. No. You want to set up the most one-sided fight humanly possible.
Put
if you're
yourself
actually in
a situation that you have to Charlie Foxtrot so bad to be able to lose. Make it idiot-proof.
Mm-hmm.
That's the situation you want to be in every time.
Absolutely. Okay, man, so if folks wanted to find you online, where can they hunt you down?
Boy, me personally?
Yeah.
Wow.
Search your shit out.
Yeah, so...
So they can send you angry messages.
They can, yeah, so you, I have an Instagram. It's I'm actually going to double check because I'm terrible at the self-promotion. But it's T-Marsh... 8364, I believe. You can find me on Instagram at tmarsh8364. I also have, you know, I do some content on the side as well, so they can look for Tag Soup Adventures on Tag Soup Adventures on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. But you can find me on Instagram at tmarsh8364. I'm on Twitter with that handle as well, and I might allow somebody to follow me and get more rants like that, you know, for a small nominal fee.
Oh man, as long as you're not making bets about text messages again.
Never. I'm out of that business.
Out
it's
of that
dangerous.
Business.
Out it's
of that
too
business.
Dangerous.
All right, so one thing I would like to kind of close out with is, say, you know, somebody comes up to you, you know, they find out you're a hunter or whatever, you know, they just maybe someone, you know, whatever it is, they're like, you know, man, I've always wanted to get into hunting, and like, it just sounds awesome. Like, you know, it's something I've been interested in, but like, there's so much to learn, so much to buy. Like, it just, it's a lot to get into. I don't know if it's something I can actually feasibly do. Mm-hmm. What kind of encouragement would you give that person?
Obviously, if it's somebody that's local to me, I'm going to do everything that I can to shorten that learning curve for them. It's the local resource is always the best one, but obviously finding local resources, not always easy. Honestly, one of the best places that you can go is find those local conservation groups to you, whether it's their social media, whether it's, you know, I'm getting ready to come back. I'm going to Whitetails Unlimited banquet here in a couple weeks. You know, find those type of whatever it is that you're wanting to get into, whether it's social media or in person, find it, go, and you will find the people that don't want to help. You don't want their help anyway. You don't want that help anyway. You go into a Whitetails Unlimited banquet and somebody says, oh, how long you been hunting? And say, I'm just getting started. I figured this was a good place to come meet. I guarantee you, you tell that to 10 people in that room and 10 of them are going to say, well, what do you want to know? How mm-hmm. do you want to hunt? How can I help? By and large, folks are out there to help. So find those groups on social media. You know, the main thing is, and it's another red flag for me. The first time somebody if they're telling me how great of a deer hunter they are, my antenna goes up. I start worrying about it. You know, it's always evolving. It's always changing. You killed one 180, the next one's not going to think the same way.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, I've because of my work, I've been able to spend time with some folks that kill a lot of deer and a lot of big deer. And the good ones will tell you, if you had the amount of time in a tree stand that I did, you'd kill big deer too. You went to the places that I did, it's a full-time job.
Yep.
You know, these pros aren't just showing up and killing a 180 three times a year, first hunt. It's not. The number of hours that they spend doing this to put together 13 original episodes every year and make it look like it... Most hunters that think they want to do that couldn't if they had the opportunity. They just can't. So find those local resources, connect with those local hunters, and just come into it, A, understanding that you will never know everything because it's not all knowable, and B, come in and be completely transparent. Hey, I'm just learning. I'm looking for somebody to help me. And no, everybody isn't going to be able to be that mentor, but somebody will be willing to be that mentor. So check those resources out, find those, and... You know, we didn't have YouTube when I was growing up, man. The amount of information that you can find there, even just ask other people, you know, where do you learn about this? You know, it's there's a reason that information is still out there in print form and YouTube form and podcast. Just mm-hmm. if you're into it, man, just search it. Find out what other people like. Start listening to it. Find what your real flavor is. You'll find your niche. You'll get too far into it, and we'll gripe about you 5 years from now because you decided you like west-facing tree stands instead of east, and we can argue about it all day.
Those damn west-facing tree stands.
I'm here to tell you. That evening hunt, staring into the sun, no thank you. Not here for that. Not here for that.
Oh, man. Detroit, dude, I'm so glad we finally got to do this. Thank you so much for taking the time. Agreed. It's been a busy-ass week. My feet are either going to get soaked in the hotel bathtub tonight while I polish off a six-pack like a sad, lonely person.
I would, you know, I still have, well, you can just, you know, you live the charmed life. You can just show closes down and you can walk away from it. And this is another one of those working in the industry things.
Yeah, there you go.
That booth that we're looking at, I get to come back in here tomorrow morning and tear it all down and put it into a crate and then get on a flight at 5 a.m. Sunday morning. So, yeah, you can spare me the soaking your feet in the hot tub, drinking a six-pack when I still got to work tomorrow after the show's closed.
You know, I will. While I'm soaking my feet, drinking my beer,
you'll think about me.
I'll pull up my phone. I'll pull up Spotify and play like a nice little violin solo just for you.
The smallest violin solo you can find.
The saddest song I can find. But thanks, man. It's been a lot of fun.
Always love talking.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time, but until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from The Wild Initiative family, and more.